Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not so humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scani Johnny himself. And as you can tell from the music at the beginning here today, I am going to be doing the John Solo version of the podcast as Aaron is attending to several different issues around the house that he has to take care of. So we're definitely wishing him well on that, and hopefully everything goes well. And Godspeed to you, Aaron, and to Holly and to your family. We'll be talking to him again soon here, hopefully. So anyhow, you can follow this podcast, as always, at ScaniJohnny1 on Twitter there. You can also follow me at JBarn54. That would be JBARN54. And Aaron, you can always follow him at Cheddar Talk. And I won't go on for the 5 minutes he normally takes going over the Cheddar Talk thing, but let's get right into it this week. And let's start off with the main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
There's not much news in terms of Packers this week. The big news is Wayne Gesicki moved up to take over the strength and conditioning coach. Easy for me to say. Strength and conditioning coach this year. So he's going to be taking that role on. He's definitely a guy who I think everybody remembers very clearly from post 9/11. When the NFL came back after 9/11, he was the player who was able to step in there and take the flag out onto the field. And that was a moment that everybody remembers and that everybody can think back from those days and remember that as a very connective moment, a connective tissue for all Packers fans, is thinking back on that time and exactly what that meant to us, having somebody who is a Chair Force Academy graduate stepping in there and taking that moment and having someone like that. And obviously he is a stacked man. He is a very well-built guy. He definitely knows how to work out. And hopefully that works out, because the strength and conditioning, I hope, having somebody there can help with the minor pulls and all the problems that we've had in terms of injuries on the Packers the last couple of years. I can't say that that's for real going to happen, but it definitely is something important. The one thing I want to go into in terms of Packers and former Packers playing football right now in the AAF, the AAF, is that there are several of them who are doing very well right now. Former Packers right now ranked 4th and 5th. I mean, there's 8 teams. 4th and 5th in the league in rushing yards. Jarrell Presley, former Packer, played one game, as anyone may remember. 155 yards rushing in 3 games. Joel Bonion, 154. So he's in 5th place. Greer Martini, one of our favorites from the preseason this year. Decent-looking linebacker. He's actually 4th in the league in tackles with 15. One name that we all may remember is a former Packer. And of course, being a former Packer was also a former Viking in the way that things roll downhill. So Packers, Vikings, AAF. But he's tearing it up in the AAF. He has 305 yards receiving for the Orlando Apollos. He leads the league. He is number one among all AAF wide receivers in terms of yardage. That's in terms of ex-Packers there. There was something here from Charles Johnson. He also made some quotes about how he really likes the AAF, and one of the things he loves is that there's no politics. And he didn't mean that they don't do political things or they don't talk about politics, stuff like that. What he means is there's no expectations in draft picks, or that you were drafted in some place you're going to be, you know, given a better chance to make it because of where you were drafted or what people above you thought of you. There's no expectations. Everybody came in equal. He says the quote exactly is, everybody's pretty much equal. He means everybody's coming from the same spot. There's no first-round pick versus a seventh-round pick. Nobody's spots are guaranteed. Everybody here, right now at least, is starting off fresh. There's no real veteran presence on these teams other than that some of these guys play somewhere else. In terms of that, that's really the only big Packers news I can see on here in terms of big leaders in the AAF. We'll move on to non-football news, because that's mostly what we have. And thank goodness, finally and at last, we have some Bob Uecker and we have some Milwaukee Brewers. Spring training begins this week, or began the week between last podcast and this one. Brewers unceremoniously started off with a 4-8 loss to the Chicago Cubs. And of course, drunk David Stearns was all over that one, but it's a preseason loss. Basically, neither side played anybody all that much. 24-year-old Corey Ray played center field. He went 2 of 3 with a double and a home run and 3 RBI in that game, so that he was the most impressive player for the Brewers for that game, at least. They did follow it up with a more impressive-looking 10-1 win over the Texas Rangers. Playing third base, Hernan Perez went 2 for 3, hit a home run, a double, and raked in 7 RBI. It's nice to see also Orlando Arcia went 2 for 2 with a double and an RBI in that game, so that definitely helped out. It's just nice to be able to see him out there hitting, kind of at least playing. Hopefully, if we can get him playing in the way he did in the playoffs and have him do that during the course of the season, that would be a huge step for this team and definitely a big thing for this team going forward, having a hitting presence from that shortstop instead of, you know, just the glove that he brings. If he can give any kind of hitting like he did at the playoff time, that would be phenomenal. And then today, Monday, of course, they played the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, whatever they call themselves these days. Lucas, I don't know if I'm getting this right, Erceg, came into the game for Tyler Saladino at third base. He then, I think, 2 for 3 with 2 RBIs and 2 RBI and scored a run. Ben Gamel started the game playing out in left field, moved to center. I only bring that up because it clearly shows the team starting to look for some depth in that center field area. He's been a corner outfielder most of the time, but getting Ben Gamel out there playing center field some today, trying to look for other people to at least be able to step up into those spots. In the game, though, the Brewers did fall 4-3. And again, it doesn't matter who won or lost. It's just mostly who did what out there. So that's the interesting parts, at least, as far as Brewers spring training is gone. So now let's get to teams that played real games. Games that counted for something and went onto a record someplace. Forgive me for my little bit of cough and my little bit of a rough throat here. I've been fighting something. UW men's basketball came up with a big win over Northwestern. I guess it's a big win. It's the only thing you can get is you get a win. They won 69-64. It's not horribly impressive. They were actually down 32-31 at half. You know, they did get the win. With 15 seconds left in the game, UW was up 65-64. They fouled Davison. He went 2 for 2. Northwestern went down, missed a three-pointer. I'm sorry. Then Reavers got fouled, and he went 2 for 2, and then that basically ended the game. So 4 straight free throws, though, 4 for 4, ending the game in free throws, Davison and Reavers. That's great because it was a close game. It was a one-point game and ended up being a five-point game because the Badgers hit their free throws down the end, and that's big and that's important. Even Happ was 2 of 4 in free throws for this game, and the team as a whole shot 75% from the free throw line. So that's really great. Happ ended up the game 14-10-3, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. The thing that really kind of makes this a little tougher here is that he only had 1 point at halftime. So that was just one basket. It was a free throw, obviously, because it was 1 point. But just 1 point, and he didn't score that point until there's 3:46 left in the first half. So very difficult first half. They kept him in check, and they ended up, Northwestern, of course, had a lead at halftime, and Happ wasn't getting a whole lot of time there. Davison helped out the team 16-6-3. Trice scored 14 points, went 4 of 9 from 3-point. At least getting that scoring from that backcourt is going to be very key to this team. The team thrives on getting Happ the ball down low and being able to kick out to people who can shoot. They don't have a dribble drive. They don't have that sort of point guard that gets in there and starts pushing down the floor and getting people to draw in and kick out. They have to play an inside-out game. And they don't have that real true point guard. They have a bunch of guys who are shooters. Trice is a three-point shooter. He's a very good three-point shooter, especially when he's on. I mean, hitting 4 of 9 is a great three-point shooting night. The problem is when he's not hitting, he doesn't do all the other things that you would expect from guys like, you know, Michael Finley or Devin Harris or some of the, or even Bronson Koenig in the last several years here, that the Badgers have seen traditionally from those point guards and those guys who can handle the ball and make things happen even when they aren't scoring. Trice is a scorer. And so that's part of just what's going on with this team, I think, at some point. The big things are Trice doesn't dribble drive enough to draw a lot of fouls. Happ doesn't get enough fouls, and he doesn't make his free throws. And Davison's a little inconsistent at this point. But they get the win. They get the win here. Northwestern had Vic Law get 24 points and Derek Pardon get 21. The rest of the team together, if you're doing the math in your head at home, the rest of the team together had 19 points. Badgers held the Wildcats to 40.7% shooting. And half the game, Look at this. They're now just half a game behind Maryland for fourth place in the Big Ten, meaning, of course, they're in fifth. And that means that they have the chance to catch up because they've just got one game in hand, Maryland does. So Badgers have a chance and an opportunity to catch up to Maryland at this point. Badgers will move on. They only played the one game this week, but they will be playing Indiana at Indiana on Tuesday. So the next win would actually give the Badgers 20. It would be another 20-win season. They're 19-8 currently, and like I said, fifth place for now in the Big Ten. Next, we have Marquette. We're trying to get better at getting Marquette and getting everybody in, and of course, that means sometimes I have to talk a little faster to try to get things in. This might be a shorter podcast without Aaron, but I'm going to try to get to as much as I can here. Marquette had several games here this week. They're now 23-4. They beat Butler by 10 points, 79-69. Marcus Howard in that game, 28 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Theo John had 15-11-1, and they got 11 points from the bench in that game. Butler had a familiar name, Sean McDermott. Went 27-8. He had no assists. In terms of three-pointers, this is where Marquette really pulled away and got their advantage. Well, I guess in terms of the number of shots here, 9 of 21 for Marquette. That's 42.9% from three. Butler shot very well as well, 8 of 24. They hit one-third of their threes and still were the worst of the two shooting teams. Took three more shots and made one less. So that's a difference there in this game at this point from what they were able to do. Marquette has some very good scorers, and they can score in a lot of different places here. Showed up a lot more when they played Providence, I'll tell you that, because they got a 76-58 win. So in this one, Marcus Howard was only 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, but he got a lot of help from his friends. All right, Sakhar Anim was 18-3-4. Joey Hauser was 15-7-2. And Sam Hauser, 18-13-1. So double-double for Sam Hauser there. Getting a lot of help from different people. Getting three different players over 15 and four players over 14 points in that game. Definitely helped them pull away from Providence. That's the team they have to beat. Providence has not been one of the better teams in the Big East. I believe they're last in the Big East. But then they have a game coming up this Wednesday here where they're going to be playing the number two team in the Big East, the Villanova Wildcats. Now, that's coming up Wednesday. That's the top of the Big East. Right now, Villanova is 20-8. They're 11-4 overall. And St. John's Red Storm, they're 20-8 as well, but they're 8-7 in conference. So right now, Marquette, as I said, 23-4, 12-2 in conference. So if they can get another win here against Villanova, they'll give them two straight here against Villanova. It'll also give them a three-game lead in the Big East as they start winding down the season here. So Marquette, ranked number 11 at the time here, so this is definitely a team to keep an eye on. There's a good chance we start seeing both the Badgers and the Golden Eagles having a chance at a Sweet 16 here, and it could be a great season for Wisconsin basketball in terms of Wisconsin and Marquette. So the state of Wisconsin having a great time in college basketball right now. Moving along to the Bucks this week, we had a couple games, a couple interesting ones. The Bucks took on the Celtics as a team that has been the classically most underachieving team in the NBA this season. The Celtics were a team that went all the way to the NBA Finals, were expected to be the class of the Eastern Conference this year. But they've had a lot of struggles. They have not done the sorts of things that they should be getting to. But they had a very close game with the Bucks this week. The Bucks pulled out a squeaker here. There's a 98-97 win. Now, it was 93-92. Giannis got fouled, and he put up two free throws, made them both, made it 95-92, three-point lead. The Celtics get the ball back. Al Horford makes a three-pointer to make it a 95-95 game. From that point on, Middleton hit a three-pointer to give the Bucks a three-point lead, and the Celtics answered with a Kyrie Irving layup. They ran out the time. There's about 30 seconds left there, but they ran out the clock, got the game over, and that was the final, 98-97. The difference was the Middleton three. After the Celtics were able to tie it up, Middleton goes down, hits the three, and Kyrie could answer with a layup, and that's how that all played out. Giannis had 30 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. Middleton was 15, 13, and 4, and even Brogdon kicked in another 15 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists. So a great game. It's good to see the Bucks pull out late ones, pulling out a game where they really needed to have a win at the end of that game. Giannis pulling through great there, but also having Middleton play that role of being somebody else who makes that shot. They have several people here who are making the big roles and stepping in and making those plays as the season goes on, and I just love the way this team is put together and how they're getting it done. They then got to go and play the Timberwolves. Now, this was a game where Karl-Anthony Towns did not play. And I believe it's his second missed game of his career is what I heard. Now, it sounds like he was in a horrible vehicle accident, and he might be very fortunate to be alive, at least from how he's described it. I have no reason to doubt him. He doesn't seem like he'd make things up or try to press it there. But we're glad that he's okay, and the people seem to be okay on there. It did lead to the Bucks pulling away pretty easily on this one. They had a 140 to 128 win over the Timberwolves. Giannis scored 27 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. The Bucks had 6 players above 15 points. Giannis, Middleton, Lopez, Brogdon, Bledsoe, and Mirotić, all of them 15-plus points. Now, you get 6 players hitting 15 points or above, it's going to be hard to beat a team like that, especially when you got Giannis pushing 30. Like he does most nights. The other interesting part, of course, is it was 90s night, and they had Ja Rule, who made a point to try to say that he wasn't a 90s artist, that he was a 2000s artist, and just throwing shade on the entire thing while his audio was not working. And then, of course, the best part, the best pure visual of the Ja Rule show is his halftime show is still going on, and the Bucks come out and just start shooting free throws and shooting their three-pointers. There's Giannis is out there by himself during a halftime show and just shooting free throws. If you haven't seen it on Twitter at this point, I don't know how you've missed it. You need to follow the Bucks and see those things. It definitely came up on a couple different places. It was a surreal sort of thing and very strange. And I guess the first time I've seen or heard a lot of talk about Ja Rule other than Fire Fest in quite a while. The one thing I will say is that it's been very great to watch Mirotić and Ilyasova off the bench. This has been the sort of thing the Bucks have needed. They've been able to get those bench points. It's those players who can do those things that can give the players rest, who can get out there and make those big plays. And especially like tonight, Monday night, of course, as you know, we're recording on Monday night. The Bucks beat the Bulls 117 to 106, and Giannis rested. And of course, it's the greatest thing to do for a Milwaukee team to tell the Bulls, you know what, we're not even going to play the MVP of the league. We're just going to kind of sit back and let Ersan Ilyasova get 10 points, 6 rebounds, and an assist, and still beat you. Middleton scored 22, and so did Brogdon. They got 13 more from Lopez, and then they got 13 from Mirotić, and 10 more from Connaughton. So, again, we had 6 players in double digits, and points from just all over the place. Wood had 2, Wilson had 7, Snell had 4, Bledsoe had 8, 6 from Kanan. Just a great game all around. So many players adding into this 117 to 106 win. In a game where they did not have Giannis at all. They did a great thing, and it's so great to have the sort of ability to take people off the bench and to make sure that we're not just burning people out through this season. So I really do feel very positive about the Bucks season going forward. It's great to watch them. And I'll tell you, I usually rely very heavily on Aaron during the Bucks segments. And part of that is just that Milwaukee Bucks, unlike most of the other things, and I've talked about this before, unlike the Badgers in either football or basketball, or the Brewers or the Packers, those are all statewide teams. They put the state outline on their uniforms or something like that, and that's exactly right. You go from here to Superior or to La Crosse, and they are playing Euchre. Bob Euchre. They're also playing the game Euchre, but they're playing Bob Euchre on the radio. They're listening to the Packers. They're watching the games, and that's what people are doing. They're following those things. They are state teams, but there's not a lot of talk about the Bucks in places like Eau Claire or La Crosse when I've been there. I'm not saying they aren't watching the Bucks. I'm not saying they don't like the Bucks. And I'm in central Wisconsin, and we definitely like to see the Bucks win, but there's not a lot of talk about the Bucks in central Wisconsin because we're getting ready for whatever's going to come next with the Brewers. And then we're already talking about what's happening with the Packers draft and how much we're going to be talking about that until April. So the problem is that the Bucks really, unlike the other teams in the state, the Bucks are a Milwaukee team more than they are a Wisconsin team. And, you know, I'm sure people will disagree with me on that, but that's my experience of watching the Bucks and living in this state from, you know, up north to La Crosse to Stevens Point to Madison and the different places I've lived. The Bucks are way bigger down in Milwaukee area than they are in the rest of the state. And it doesn't mean the state doesn't love them. It doesn't mean we aren't rooting for them to win. But if I've got the Bucks on or an AAF game, I don't know where I'm going with that sometimes. So, and I'm definitely picking a Badger basketball game over a Bucks basketball game. And I'm not in a minority when I say that. Well, in terms of Wisconsin's major sports, that's all we have here. So what we're going to try to do here now is move along, get to some of the other sports that get a little less coverage here, and we cover those things in what we call the tail.
Rapid fire time now with the tail, covering Wisconsin's other sporting events.
So first off in the tail, we cover college hockey. The first one, of course, is UW men's hockey, where the men actually split this weekend in Penn State. The number 19 ranked Nittany Lions, the Badgers lost Friday night big, 8-2, to one of the leading scoring teams in the country. If not the leading, and I guess I didn't double check which team is leading the country in scoring right now, but it's been Penn State most of the year. Great scoring team. Sometimes they give up a bunch too, but they got a split this week because on Saturday night, the Badgers won 7-3. So that does basically effectively end the Badger season this year because the Badgers now will move into the Big Ten tournament, getting ready to play against some of these other teams here. They finished last, so they'll get to play Michigan won, I think, in the regular season. But either way, they're not going anywhere this year. This is not a year for the Badger hockey team. They didn't even have a winning record, okay? But they had some good wins, and they had some good goal scoring. Here, the end of the season stats leaders, your scoring leader, which again is goals plus assists, was Keandre Miller. I believe he's already been drafted by the Rangers. He's a freshman. He led the team with 22 points. That's with 5 goals and 17 assists. Sean Doogie was the goal scoring leader. He had 10 goals, 8 assists, and he's a sophomore. Senior Seamus Malone actually ended up third in scoring and third in goals. He had 8 goals, 13 assists. The goalie, Daniel Lebedev, he had a 3.3 goals against average. That's goals given up per game, the goals scored against him per game. And I guess looking him up this week, and I really wanted to bring this up with Aaron. Now, Daniel Lebedev is from Helsinki, Finland, but most recently played in, I believe it was called the North American Hockey League, for Janesville, which is where Aaron is. So Aaron, when you listen to this later, you'll know that Daniel Lebedev is a guy who you could have watched had you just gotten down to Janesville from Duluth a little sooner. So, and he's also a young guy too. I believe he's a sophomore or a freshman. So they got a couple things there. They got a lot of good goal scorers, but yeah, not a great year here. Good recruiting class coming in. You should keep your eye open for next year. Don't expect the Badgers to make noise in the Big Ten tournament though. Badgers women actually had a rough weekend. After regaining the number one spot in the country, they played the Ohio State Buckeyes, who are the number 10 ranked team in the country. Friday night, they had a 1-1 tie. And in that one, then they lost the shootout 1-0. And that one was, oh, is that the one? In that game, the Ohio State goalie, Andrea Brandley, I don't know, she's from Switzerland. She had 52 saves in regulation for a 1-1 tie. And then she stopped all the shots in overtime, in the shootout overtime. The lone goal went to Abby Roque. And then on Saturday night, they had a 2-2 tie. Actually, Ohio State got up early in this one. They were up 2-0. And Badgers had to come back hard. They got goals from Sophie Shirley and Emily Clark to make it a 2-2 tie. They took that one into a shootout as well, in which Ohio State won 2-1. So they'll now start off the WCHA tournament against St. Cloud State. Wisconsin women stay in the WCHA, even though the men left for the Big Ten a couple years back. But there is no Big Ten league play in women's hockey. It's still the Western Collegiate Hockey Association. Senior Annie Pankowski was the scoring leader. She had 37 points this year, 17 goals, 20 assists. Junior Abby Roque had 36. She had 9 goals and 27 assists. Your goal leader was a freshman, Sophie Shirley, who I just mentioned had one of the goals in the Saturday night game against Ohio State. She ended the season with 19 goals, 16 assists for a total of 35 points. Now, the goalies on this team are Kristen Campbell and Brianna Blessy. Campbell is a junior, Blessy is a sophomore. So they're going to be coming back for next year. But it's been great to have 6 great seniors here that have been great leaders, especially Annie Pankowski and I believe Sophia Shaver, some of the bigger names that have been long here in this team. And hopefully they have a great tournament, and hopefully they have a great NCAA tournament and can take this out as national champions again. In terms of D3 hockey, just to quickly go over, if you follow me on Twitter, you know I was at the Pointers River Falls Falcons game on Saturday night with my whole family. So we had the whole crew there. Friday night, Pointers beat the Falcons 6-0, and on Saturday night, they beat them 6-2. This team is incredible. They're very crisp passers. They get the puck up and down the ice very quickly. They play great defense, not just blocking shots, but when the goalie was getting the puck off the rebounds, they were the first stick there. They're clearing it away from the net and turning defense into offense very quickly. They got ahead in this game and just took away the whole thing. And then it, of course, rained on us, and we had freezing rain all the way home. But great atmosphere over there in KB Willett, and it was a wonderful win. And UWSP moves on to the WIAC Finals, where they will face UW-Eau Claire in what was a very, very interesting series from this last weekend. UW-Eau Claire played UW-Superior. Superior won Friday night 2-0, which was their second straight win against UW-Eau Claire this season. As you know, they beat them the week before or 2 weeks prior. They were up 2-0 in the third period against UW-Eau Claire, and Eau Claire came back and tied it up, took it into overtime. UW-Eau Claire then scored and made it a 3-2 win in overtime. Now, the way this works in these plays is they play 2 games. If the winner sweeps, they're done. If they split, they play a mini game. So they played a mini game. Eau Claire won that 2-0. So after Superior wins and is up for 2 periods plus, they scored the second goal, I believe, in the third period. But they're up in the third period of game 2, about to be on their way to WIAC final. And they end up losing, and then losing the minigame 2-0. Eau Claire will play Stevens Point. I didn't see the updates. Number 1 ranked Stevens Point. Eau Claire was number 6 coming into the weekend and, of course, gets the win. Another Wisconsin sports, St. Norbert's moves on. They beat Marion 6-2. They got goals from Peyton Franti, Kurt Black. Actually, Peyton Franti at 2. Kurt Black, Dominic Sacco, Stephen Phillips, and Tyler Andrews. Shots on goals were 34-15 in favor of the St. Norbert's Knights. St. Norbert College will move on to play the Adrian Bulldogs next in the NCHA, I believe, finals this week. And then we'll start getting ready for what will be the NCAA tournament. Quick little news here also on WIAC basketball in men's. UW Oshkosh takes the regular season championship. They went 13-1 at this point. They are the number 4 ranked team in the country. Finishing second right now is UW Lacrosse in men's basketball. They're in the receiving votes category, meaning they're ranked roughly 31st in the nation in basketball, which is insane for me to think of as a UW Lacrosse graduate because they were not good when I was there. In fact, UW Oshkosh, or lovingly known as UW-0, their only loss was to UW Lacrosse. Platteville beat both UWSP and UWL this weekend. In men's basketball, UWO, they took this conference regular championship as well. They were 12-2 in the conference, 24-3 overall. UW Whitewater finished second, and Lacrosse finished third. Right now, UW-Eau Claire is ranked number 1 in the Central Division, or Central Region, heading towards the NCAA playoffs. Whitewater is ranked 7th and Lacrosse 8th. So all 3 of those teams are likely to get into the NCAA tournament this year. UWL, UWO, and UWW. UWL, this UW Lacrosse, took the WIAC Wrestling Championship. They are ranked number 9 nationally. Whitewater is ranked 14th. UWSP is ranked 22nd. And kind of going backwards here, Oshkosh was ranked 21st. And to show where that ranks, they were right behind the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, which is ranked 18th in the nation in Division III wrestling. And that's why they're the Coast Guard and not one of the other, you know, real branches of the military, because they belong to Homeland Security and the Treasury. So that's our quick roundup. Just trying to get through a bunch of Wisconsin sports as much as we can to give you a real full round view of Wisconsin sports, because we don't want to give you just little bits here and there of just the big stuff. We want to make sure that you are a well-rounded Wisconsin sports fan and know where all these different sports actions that are going on around the state are going here, because we have lots of great national programs at the D3 level as well who are competing for national titles and are well-respected across the country. And it's always good to remember that they're there. So we're going to end this week, and we're going to get out of here pretty quickly, because without Aaron, there's nobody here to tell me that we need to talk about some random historical figure that he just forgot about from the 1985 Packers team, or some 1987 Brewer that he can't remember the name of that will take up a bunch of our time. And so we'll move on to the very last thing here I want to get to, which is, of course, our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings, because it's time for the last call.
First thing I want to talk about in the last call is something that Aaron texted me. We were talking by the phone earlier. The big problem is, of course, Aaron has something that's come up in his family, so he can't be here today. But the one thing he did want to say, and he wanted to make sure got out here, is that his cousin Jack is playing forward for the UW. He's playing for Eau Claire North, and they are the number 5 seed taking on Verona in the state hockey high school championships this weekend. Apparently back in 2011, Eau Claire North was a winless hockey team. And right now, they're number 5 seed going to take on Verona this week. So Aaron wanted to wish him good luck. We're all wishing him good luck. Good luck to all the hockey players out there this weekend and moving forward. I know we had some WIAA events here in Wisconsin Rapids recently. I believe Rapids is playing Spash. So good luck to all the high schoolers, and have fun, stay safe, and play a great game. In terms of my last call, of course, one of the first things that comes up is that there was Robert Kraft this week. That was one of the big pieces of news that went out. And I guess the first big thing is that too many people made a joke out of it. Too many people made light of it and just tried to make frat boy type jokes about the whole thing. This story seems to have involved a lot of women who are very much involved in a lot of caught up in a lot of things that were beyond their control and taken horribly advantage of, several of them from other countries. And some of them appear to have been subjects of human trafficking. Now, all of that being said, the one thing I have to talk about is that the NFL here has to step in and do something about Robert Kraft. They can't just let this go. They can't just wipe this under the rug and hope it goes away and say, you know, he's a good guy. Richardson, the owner of the Panthers, former owner of the Panthers, was forced to sell his team for a lot of different things that are less terrible than being involved in a place that was involved in human trafficking. He was obviously somebody who said several things he should never have said, maintained a work environment that should never be maintained. Nobody should be forced to work for something, some sort of conditions under which Richardson was keeping some of his employees. But Robert Kraft has been an embarrassment to this league at this point in terms of being involved in something as odious and as terrible to the league as this. It's not just something where, like, he made a choice that could be legal in several different places. And the places where something like that is legal is much more supervised. He went to some place where it was not legal. Don't whitewash this. Don't say it's not that this is okay and that lots of people do it. That doesn't make this okay. He was involved in something that was illegal and in many ways involved and does involve frequently human trafficking. And this occurs in most states. As a former prosecutor, and I can tell you that we definitely know where a lot of those places are in different states and where they're coming from and how people are being moved. And it's a rough thing. And it's a difficult thing to deal with. Robert Kraft needs to be held accountable, and this needs to be treated seriously by the NFL. You can't be trying to constantly be too late to address things like domestic violence and human trafficking. One of the first things that the FBI said is the biggest draws towards human trafficking in the United States is you look at any city that has both an NBA team and an NFL team. It is a problem in these cities, and I don't know that it's necessarily that the players are the problem. It's that the situations present themselves, that the large places of money, that the establishments around there, that the draw, the show, the attention brings these sorts of things. And they end up being cities also that are big enough to support these undercurrents within the communities. The biggest one in the Midwest, St. Paul, Minneapolis area, is one of the biggest, and I believe it's top five on the FBI list in terms of human trafficking in the United States. And you don't think about that here, but it's a big enough city that has that. And it isn't just their fault. It's because they're the pull for a lot of areas around them, too. This is a serious issue. It needs to be addressed, and people don't understand the breadth or scope of the problem here. And if you're going to kick out Richardson for things like this, then the owners seriously need to talk about whether or not Robert Kraft can come back as an owner of this league, because this should be a problem. So to do something lighter, though, because that's obviously a pretty heavy task to talk about the Robert Kraft and human trafficking sorts of things. The other thing I'll say is happy trails to Christian Hackenberg. I mean, we saw him at Penn State come in. He was Bill O'Brien's golden boy. He started as a freshman. He played all the way through. He was a guy who seemed like he was just on the way up and up and up. And he just never got better, and he never amounted to something. He never really found anything better. He hit that, and now he is done and done and done. His draft stock fell coming out of Penn State. He then gets into the NFL. He could not get anything going with the Jets. He ends up being cut there. He was playing with the Memphis Express in this league for a defensive-minded coach, and he's done. I'm not rooting against him. It's sad to see somebody who had so much promise just end up kind of washing out so completely, even in a league where you got your chance to show who you were. You get your chance to go out there one more time, and he couldn't do it. And that's just the end of it. There's no more Christian Hackenberg talk. The other thing I do want to say is AAF, Alliance of American Football, you need to put stats on your app. When I went looking for stats about this, I pulled up my AAF app, the Alliance app, and they don't have stats. You cannot see league leaders. You can't even follow stats during a game. Now, they have a couple great things with their app. Like, you can follow the individual game. It'll show you how players are moving. And you can even watch the games. But you can't find the stats. If I want to see who's leading the team in rushing yards at any given moment, say I come into a game halfway through and I don't know what's going on, I can't see who's been running the ball. I can't see who's been throwing well. I don't know who the leading receiver is unless I actually go hunt it down online on a computer. I can't get it just from the app. Make your app better. And for God's sakes, go out there and add a fantasy component to your app and to your webpage. It needs to happen. There needs to be an AAF fantasy league that I can get involved in, and so I can get excited about having Joel Bonion on my fantasy football team. So that's all I've got this week. That's the only things we have. It's been a bit of a slow week. And without Aaron here, it's a little bit of a shorter podcast. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a little bit of something. I hope you found something interesting about if you went to one of those Wisconsin schools, River Falls or Stout or Eau Claire or Superior or La Crosse or Stevens Point or any of those places. I hope you found something about your team here today, and I hope you had a great time. And anyway, I'll remember that you can follow me at jbarn54. You can follow the podcast at ScottyJohnny1. You can even follow Aaron, who may or may not give us an errands aside during the week. You can follow him at Cheddar Talk. And you can also email the show at scottyjohnny@gmail.com. But always remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, that it is always on Wisconsin. See you next week, Aaron.